This episode is sponsored by Bigger City. Thank you so much for supporting us and helping our show to grow.
Hello, and welcome to the Big Fat Gay Podcast, where we like to talk about the things that are weighing on our minds. My name's Don Marshall. I'm a big chubby guy living here in sunny Hollywood. And today I am so excited to be making my first coconut cake. Yes. I'm going to make a foray into tropical cakes this afternoon.
I have so many questions. Hi, my name is Dan Oliverio, author, public speaker, and chubby chaser. And today I'm in a little time warp because we're recording on an unusual day. And so I don't know what day it is. So I'm making up that it's Sunday.
Let's do the time.
And you're wrong.
But in my mind, Don, it's Sunday. I'll send you a postcard.
I would love for it to be Sunday.
I'm Trevor Keyson. I'm a super chub. And today I know what day it is. I'm bringing that big Monday energy. I have just been today we are in discombobulation nation.
Well, hi, my name is Michael Willer. I'm a chubby chaser, and I'm pretty bobulated today. I feel
combobulated.
No.
Bobulated. Yeah.
Just not too much one, not too much
the chase. The chasers understand.
Yeah. It's a chaser thing. I just came back from a trip, so I'm feeling pretty good. It was a lot, but I got a mental reset. I got to worry about a bunch of other things I don't normally worry about, and now I'm back to normal life again. Well, welcome to the episode, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again. We would like to thank our Patreon.
Thank you, Patreon. The patrons of Patreon.
The patronesses. they give us their money. That's frankly kind of insane. But thank you for doing that. It helps pay for
Michael, don't tell them.
They give us their
money. You make it sound like we don't need it.
Money. No. Oh, we need it for sure. It's not like it's not a frivolous thing, but I don't know. I like my money. I like spending it on things. We want to thank our sponsor, Bigger City, for sponsoring our show once again. This is a fantastic partnership that has worked out very nicely. We're very excited for Bigger Bash that's coming up later this summer.
Which is in Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, it's in Vegas at the Palms.
Yeah, Bigger Bash in Vegas is September 6th through 8th.
Yeah, and I think I'm certainly going to be there. I know Trevor and Dan are planning. Mm-hmm. Don is maybe still on the fence.
I'm still seeing if I can swing it financially.
Okay. Right. Yeah. So we're planning to have a presence. We also planning some cool things. I am meeting up with Carlos from Bigger City tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
To go over logistics and try and figure out exactly what we might be able to put on during the event itself. We have some ideas, nothing set in stone yet, but.
And by event, you mean like some sort of Big Fat Gay Podcast presence?
Perhaps. Yeah, exactly. Like whether
show, it's, signing, something.
We've batted some ideas around. We just, we have to lock some stuff in. And so that's what I'm meeting with him tomorrow about. Thank you also to Bearskin for being an affiliate.
Yeah. Buy some swimwear, some shorts, cute shorts with pockets.
Yes.
And use the promo code BigFatGayPod for 15% off your order.
Yeah. Helps us out. You get a discount. Everybody wins.
Yeah. And thank you to Big Fig. First child, not favorite child, but mothers don't have favorites, but they do. Mm.
It's the mothers only sponsor, the only affiliate we've got that I endorsed before they endorsed us.
That is true. OG. They're the OGs. All right, let's do it. It's pop culture. Take us away.
This is a kind of like chaotic pop culture segment today, but I have reasons that I'll get into. So starting off with New Beauty.
Yeah.
And the headline is, is look maxing the next evolution in body shaming?
Okay, hold on. We got to get this term.
Yep.
Looks maxing.
Oh, looks maxing. Sorry.
I hate this, by the way.
Yes, but it is so perfect because it is exactly the right sort of clunky, I don't give a shit about no language, dude. Yeah. Name for a straight, slightly incel, you know, like, stop being a beta.
It is something I expect to show up in incel culture. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
I think it's much more widespread than that.
So looks maxing is making yourself look like the best version of yourself.
Almost like looks maxing.
By celebrity makeup artist Emily Gray. This may involve facial exercises, massages, icing your face, a skincare routine, etc. Anything that will add to looking your very best.
I feel like that dances around a lot of...
Well, like, and which is fine, right? Because, like, who doesn't want to... People do things all the time to look their best. They're not necessarily toxic. Combing your hair.
Gen X had this. We just called it vanity, you know?
Well, no, we called it combing your hair. We called it washing your clothes.
Right. Well, that's part of the article is the, like, heading of old myths get a new face. Like,
yeah,
this is not exactly new behavior. It's just got a new brand to it.
Well,
it
does really kind of slam home that whole principle that, like, every generation rediscovers everything that every generation before them discovered and thinks they're the first.
No, I think there's a lot of important differences here. So one is that men are flocking to beauty products like never before. That was not true when I was growing up. A beauty product when I was growing up was suntan oil. And even that was like, what are you, a wuss? Why don't you just burn? And no, I mean, I even had students in my class, like not so very long ago. They were Turkish students and they're like, you know, suntan oil, that's for women. It was really,
I kind of
really
remember toxic. That vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fact that, you know, men are buying concealers, that is absolutely a recent trend. I mean, yes, it's been happening for a while, but I'm saying that wasn't true when I was an adolescent. And two, I do think there is this really movable line about what counts as you doing beauty for you. Like, you just like looking away and that's how you do it. Like I said, combing your hair. Nobody goes like, oh my God, I can't believe you comb your hair. You're so vain. And then there's like, okay, but what about Botox? Okay, but what about facial muscles and how you pose for selfies? And like, there's an undefined line where it becomes that's too much. And I think it's, you know, obviously individual.
I think this article is interesting because it's in a lot of ways, it's really trying to tackle some serious issues. But then it also quickly devolves into these experts trying to sell specific skincare and beauty products.
Because the magazine is called what, Trevor?
New Beauty.
New Beauty.
The mewing thing. So they talk about mewing.
What is that? Can this explain that?
That's literally the first I'd heard of it was in this article.
So mewing is like you put your tongue on the roof of your mouth.
Oh, okay. I know what this is.
And then you swallow, like you swallow, but you kind of hold it in.
Yeah, it creates a more chiseled looking jawline, but it's a temporary effect. It's only for as long as you can hold that, which is somewhat akin to holding your breath. So like you can do it for a picture.
And the problem though is they're selling it as an exercise in the bro culture of like, if you do this for like, I don't know, 6 hours a day, you'll have a stronger jawline, which is simply not true.
I find it funny because the article likens it to having, in fact, it's in their subheading, pull your eyes, massage your jaw, become Chad, which I always thought that, so that a Chad is a like basic handsome man, I think is the best way to put it. Is that fair?
The Ken of Barbie and Ken.
Yeah.
One thing I did appreciate in this article is the sharing that, because I don't really use TikTok. I think Michael is probably the one here that uses TikTok the most. And I think
only by proxy. Only because my partner Michael sends me TikToks to watch.
But there is a little tag, like when you search certain topics on TikTok, you get this tag of it's a little stomach holding a heart, and it says you are more than your weight. Or if you or someone you know has questions about body image, food, or exercise, it is important to know that help is out there and you're not alone. If you feel comfortable, you can confide in someone you trust or check out the resources, .. And then there's a thing to learn more.
I'm sorry, that's in the article?
In the article, they share a screenshot of this thing that pops up on TikTok.
Got it.
When you are searching these topics.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious what the help is. Like, do they send you to Weight Watchers when you click on it? Like,
I can't imagine.
No.
It's just a question of how you know, what line are they walking with their resources? Like, are they actually trying to help people, or are they, is this just a performance of helping people?
I think we might go into that a little more next week, because TikTok is, things are changing in TikTok, but also TikTok might be going away because of the bill buried in another bill.
In the, yeah, in the United States.
I have things to say about that.
Well, a topic for a future episode. Next up, so in people.com.
I will say, People is like, I don't know what, I guess it's maybe because of like that we are in the Ozempic era. There is so much fat or like celebrity related, like fat celebrity stuff that is, a lot of it is weight loss stuff, which is nothing new for People magazine. But just like, it seems like overnight, like something in the past couple of weeks, they are talking about fat stuff, Dan.
Well, I wonder if it's because we've never before had this many fat celebrities. And therefore, if you're going to talk about celebrities, and there's this whole thing with diet culture and Ozempic culture, blah, 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 if you have, you know, more fat celebrities than ever, more attention on weight loss treatment than ever. I mean, here we are, People Magazine.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this week interesting. In People Magazine, which is from the lifestyle food section, we're talking about Jelly Roll, the country singer. And Jelly Roll says he receives Jelly Roll cakes as gifts all the time now. It's awesome. Exclusive.
He hasn't talked to anyone else about Jelly Roll cakes.
Well, as he puts it at the very top of the article, nobody asks him about it. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm necessarily shocked. So this was a strange read for me.
Yes, me
because
too.
It starts off basically just a very jovial conversation with him about he got his nickname from his mom originally, and then you know used it as his performer name, and now has a lot of notoriety and fame, and so people like if he goes to a venue to perform, they'll like the venue will in his green room they'll leave him like jelly rolls and. It's kind of cute like that. And then it kind of shifts gear halfway mm-hmm. through. I don't know, Dan, if you want to take the reins on that one.
Well, I'm not sure if this is what you were pointing at. I just think like, wow, that's super sad that a name that your mother used to use to insult you now became the name that your friends used to insult you and now has become your stage name. I guess that's a reclaiming of ownership.
I missed that it was supposed to be an insult.
I don't think it's an insult. I think it's an endearment. It's just a like, you're fat. So here's a name that makes people think how fat you are. Endearment.
I can see Dan's point. I don't think the mom used it to insult him. I think it was like a little, I can see it being a very like, come here, little jelly roll, you know.
Yeah, it's an endearment.
And by the way, it's important to say that she actually didn't mean the Jelly Roll cake. She didn't, apparently, according to Jelly Roll, she didn't know what that was. She just thought that it was a jelly donut because it's a roll. Like if you think of a bun, it's a roll filled with jelly. So it's a jelly roll.
What I was pointing to was that about halfway down the article, I guess it's more than halfway, it starts going into weight loss, like his weight loss journey. And the heading of one particular paragraph is losing weight is just one of the many accomplishments that have come Jelly's way in 2024. And then it goes on to talk about his music accomplishments.
Which is not how he frames it. It's how the magazine frames it.
Yeah, for sure.
He frames it in terms of like, I decided, you know, and I love this, like with success came me treating myself better and he started eating better and he started getting more into, you know, health and fitness and things like that, which is great. And, you know, he lost some weight. Then of course the magazine picks that up and makes it all about, isn't it great that he lost weight?
I found this interesting because, so he is losing weight and he is talking about losing weight, but I feel like with fat male celebrities, when they are fat or just like and not in the process of losing weight, we never see, you know, fat male musicians being talked about as, you know, body positivity king.
That's
a good point.
Yes,
it's so odd, like it's so weird to me that, like, I mean, as the last article kind of like it shows that, like, okay, we don't know how to talk about male body image really, which is why an article talking about male body image talks to female beauty professionals who then are plugging makeup and beauty products.
The language.
So it makes sense that like the only way we know how to talk about fat male celebrities is through weight loss, because
that's how we talk to women.
Yeah. And it's not even that, like, the argument of, oh, well, they're not highlighting themselves as, you know, body positivity icons, because a lot of fat female musicians aren't really either. And it just kind of gets thrust upon them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like how he comes across in this article, regardless of their framework for it. It has a positive message to it, which is really just, I feel great. The reason I feel great is because I'm doing these things. And the story about being called Jelly Roll is kind of just their, like, hooky way into, I suppose, hey, we interviewed this guy.
Well, and what I really love is, you know, they don't spend much time on this in the article, but what he counts as one of the greatest things he does for his health is gratitude, acknowledging what he's grateful for.
I couldn't
for.
Get off gratitude. That's what he's. Which is great. Yeah.
There is something in this article that I kind of fell down a hole looking into. Because so he is, Jelly Roll is taking part in the Two Bears 5K with Bert Kreischer and Tom Segura. So there's, like, these two, I guess, straight guys who have a podcast that's like Two Bears, One Cave.
Yeah, and they are, I read
they are
that
very
too.
Bearish. And it's just like, do they know? Like, they have to know. And, like, one of them, the whole thing is, like, he's like a kind of bearish fat guy and he does his stand up shirtless. And I'm like, like, they have to know, right?
Oh,
like,
they must know. No, what I think is interesting is that in a lot of, like, right now, West Hollywood is becoming really, really straight. It's become so fashionable. The straight people move here. And I think that's what's happened with the term bear. Like, it's so fashionable, you don't even have to be gay.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think a lot of non-gay people see the term bear as just the visual of a bearish man and not the gay identity that's intended to come along with it.
I feel like bear is one of the few identities it doesn't really have any negative connotations. Like, bears tend to be nice. So, you know, bears can be funny. You know, they're mostly positive connotations as opposed to the jock, right? Frat bro.
Yeah.
Right. Most other terms for male body types have negative connotations.
Interesting.
I am just like, I am not really, I have some feels about bear, but I'm like, no. Like,
get your own.
I feel
word.
Like that's like the, like, we have to, like, the old guard, we have to protect bear.
That's my default too, is like, no, this is our territory. You don't get to take from us something that we gardened, we grew.
Okay, boomer,
into what it is now.
No.
I think for me it's a little bit like, I think the reason there might be straight people taking bear is because it has such a connotation of masculinity to it that any straight man can instantly attach to that, even if it started in the gay world, and go, well, I'm masculine, I look at my beard and I'm a bear. You know, like, and suddenly it just fits them too.
And women use it. Women talk about wanting to be with a big bear, cuddling with a big teddy bear. There's a lot of buy in there.
Yeah, teddy bear I think is a different thing that may have converged with what we know to be bear.
But no, it goes back to Don's point. It's like, it's really hard to, I mean, other than stealing picnic baskets, bears are pretty positive. You
know? How do we feel about eagles?
Let's see.
I love an eagle.
Fat Watch 2024.
I love the headline of this Fat Watch piece. New York Times, let them eat everything.
Well, but it's dot, dot, dot. So it's like let them eat, well, everything.
Yeah. So it's not just let them eat cake.
Yeah, let them eat everything.
In the age of Ozempic, the fat activist Virginia Sol Smith is inspiring and infuriating her followers. By Lisa Miller.
So it is a lengthy article that covers a lot of different topics. And I think perhaps the most interesting one was Dan's reaction.
Yeah, I have
when
two.
We started this episode.
I have two questions. And, like, I'm sorry, I did read this and I don't know the answers to these two questions. One, why is this an article? Because the book came out a year ago. And two, why are her fans mad at her? Like it says in the subtitle.
The central focus of the article is actually a focus on her parenting, I think.
Okay.
It's talking about how she's created mealtimes for her kids where she prepares food for them. And then basically it's served with, I'm assuming, a plate of food. Here you go. And it also includes snacks on the table. It includes anything you might want to eat. And it's the kids are told, if you don't like what's been prepared, it's fine. There are other things in the kitchen. Go get chocolate. Go get goldfish. Well, go get whatever you want.
Yes. The context for that, though, if I may.
And she doesn't force them to eat everything either.
Yes, but the context for that I think got a little lost in the article, too, is, I love this phrase, respect the labor, which means she says to her kids, respect the labor, meaning if you don't like what I made, I get that, but I am not just going to make you something else.
Yeah.
Mm. Right.
Respect the labor, the time it took for me to make what I did make. And she does. It's not like she just throws out goldfish, you know, the goldfish crackers. Yeah. But the point is, respect the labor. I made this for you. You don't like it? Well, you know, there's the kitchen. Go nuts.
It's, and particularly the quote of, you can be a mom who doesn't live solely in service of other people.
Yep.
That you deserve time to yourself, and that you're a person with needs, and that they matter. So the book, which, as Dan pointed out, came out a year ago, is very much around this subject as well. It's called Fat Talk, Parenting in the Age of Diet Culture, which is literally a guide for parents to help grapple with their discomfort and anxiety around weight and food, and how do you avoid, you know, passing that on to your kids if you can, and all of those deep, deep subjects. But as Trevor responded, because Dan, before we started recording, Dan was kind of like, why is this news? This was a year ago. What are we talking about? And I think Trevor had a good summation of why this is important, even, you know, in the New York Times.
This is still news because it is such a hot topic issue. And I think for people who have read the book and who have not read the book, because there was a review in the Washington Post that had over 1,700 comments. And one person responded that just letting kids be fat is a form of child abuse.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
And I think to be, you know, kind of one of the few, if not the only very public voice saying, let your kids be fat. Do not try to. I think all of us have experienced a different kind of child abuse as fat children. Just kind of trying to exist and try to, you know, parents with well intentions that are just causing harm and repeating a cycle of just abuse. I mean, it's
So her way of removing stress at the dinner table by basically you can eat what you want, right? You're not forced to finish what's on your plate, right? To this day, I still have anxiety if I'm throwing away food at the end of a meal, right?
Yeah.
That she removes the concept of good food versus naughty food for her kids, right? Like my first reaction of like telling kids, like, if you don't like what I made for dinner, there's chocolate in the pantry. That made me, that actually did give me a reaction of like, that seems like irresponsible parenting. But she's not telling them have chocolate for dinner. What she's telling them is she's removing chocolate as, you know, something that is to be feared, something that is to be shunned, that is that you should be eating in the dark in the pantry rather than eating at the dinner table with your family. Right. And to me, that would have changed a lot. Like, I do what she suggests in this article now. I no longer ban any foods from my house. I gave myself full permission to start eating whatever I want. And that actually started creating healthier eating habits for me because I no longer felt the need to like binge on something if I broke the diet.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I think this is interesting too in the context of, because my parents did the same thing of like, you know, finish your plate. They weren't completely over the top about like starving kids in Africa, but that is a very common refrain for parents who are trying to convince their kids to eat everything they're served.
I got that
I think
one.
That's, yeah, it was very common. And I think there's something to be said for serving your kids food that A, they may or may not like, but also B, that you've portioned for them. If you put a plate of food that the kid's not that into, but they're going to eat some of it, but then you're forcing them to eat all of it, it's creating a really strong emotional reaction, A, with that particular kind of food, but also B, to the idea of what you are served is an obligation. Like what you are served is a task to be done. And it takes away enjoyment of food and kind of playing with what it is that you like or don't like and trying new things. Well, I don't want to try this new thing because I'm going to get served so much of it and I might not like it, but then I have to finish it. You know, and it creates all of these weird intricate issues. Yeah.
Everyone I've worked with over the years in my career in counseling and stuff, every one of them who has food trauma or who has food anxiety, who has food like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to like that. Every single one of them has a background in trauma at the dinner table as a small child.
Well, and I think there's an incident that Virginia talks about that I think is a perfect example of something that could have become a huge trauma is her daughter ate a stick of butter because she thought it was cheese.
Wow. Ate a stick of butter. No. What? What was the cheese?
Because she thought it was cheese.
Like she thought it was cheese. So she just like grabbed it and like shoved the whole thing in her mouth. And her ex-husband was like, we have to do something about this. This is totally inappropriate. And he subsequently, like afterwards, he said like, okay, you know, it was in the heat of the moment. I wouldn't have that reaction now. But Virginia's like, if I put a stick of butter on the table and the kid wants to eat it, that's fine with me. Like, it's like, whatever. Like, I
wouldn't enjoy that experience. And I think it would be gross.
I have known multiple people that would actually genuinely enjoy eating a stick of butter with
friends. And I would just want to say that, first of all, the daughter did it by mistake. And I wonder how far she got.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
I mean, I had an ex who... Like when he would go out with his family would like to eat the little pats of butter.
Yeah. Yep.
And
I kind of get that. Like I don't,
it's not that uncommon. Like
his mom would like freak out. Like it would just be a whole thing. And like, she had major eating issues that went to him and his sister. Mm-hmm. And like,
which is probably how he started coveting butter in the first place.
what I was going to say.
Yeah. Like, I think it is probably like, you know, the only time he would get butter is if they went out.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
That's why I said that. Cause there is such a weird going out to a restaurant stigma around, you know, putting butter on your bread. Mm-hmm. Like, are you going to add that to your bread? Are you, why, you know, it's got this luxuriousness to it, which is silly. It's butter. It's delicious, but like, it doesn't have to be like a treat. It's like treating yourself to butter on your bread. Like, that's insane.
I literally can't put butter on my bread in a restaurant without hearing my mother's voice criticizing me.
Really?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Literally can't.
Yeah. It's bonkers, completely bonkers. But so like, I don't eat pats of butter, but I do understand the weird stigma around butter being this kind of luxury item or like decadent, I think is maybe the better.
This sounds like a great transition.
Yeah.
So well, I mean, there is one more thing that I want to talk about because I think it's a really good point that a lot of people go through. So it's tied to the butter thing. So in the article, she talks about, Virginia talks about having high cholesterol in her blood work for the first time and how her doctor's like, well, you know, you better... like no more butter. You have to switch to, you know, when you make cookies, use margarine.
Oh God.
And how she is like, I'm not doing that. I'm going to keep using butter. You know, it was like, it was the blood work was, you know, elevated, but it was like, she's like, you know, I'm going to see where it's at in a year. And if it's still high, I'm going to use medication. Yeah. Like, great.
That is so smart. I can't tell you. So I've talked here before about how every doctor I've ever been to just believes I should be diabetic and believes I should have high blood pressure.
And they get very upset when you're not.
And they get very upset that I've never had either of those things. One time, I'd been going to this doctor for 10 years at least. He took my blood pressure and my blood pressure was high. And oh my God.
The victory lap.
Oh my God, the cascade of reactions.
All the victory lap
he wanted to do. And I happened to have another appointment a month later for something else. I went back in, the blood pressure was fine, and he was so disappointed.
Exactly. Yeah, it hurts them. It hurts them.
Well, but I think
how dare you challenge their prejudices?
Like, I love like the notion of not only wait and see, but I also just love that, like, you know, when something can be treated with medication, like, great, let's treat it with medication. I'm not going to, you know, send myself into spirals that I've been to in the past and,
well,
do harm to my mental health.
And I'm sorry, it's so ridiculous because holding up hydrogenated vegetable oil as the alternative, as the healthy alternative, is absurd. Is absurd.
And I think now we can transition to, so, you know, there's a lot of controversy around, you know, in that art piece about butter and margarine. And we're talking about our favorite edible fats.
Edible fats.
Today.
I am just going to say my favorite fat for cooking is butter.
Yeah.
Is butter.
I mean, and depending on what you're cooking, but yeah.
Yeah. And it's partially because I was raised all my life being told you should be cooking with anything but butter. You should be cooking with olive oil was the thing I was always told that I should cook with, and margarine. And there is no joy in margarine. Yeah.
I grew
up. If you like margarine, go for it. By all means, eat your margarine. I personally do not.
I can't stand the smell of it.
Yeah.
I grew up in a country crock
house. Yeah.
And it was something where I didn't realize like that it wasn't.
For our foreign butter? For our international listeners, that is a brand of margarine.
Yeah, it's a very popular tub. Common brand.
Yeah.
So I have a weird little food butter. It's a short butter related anecdote, which is that I remember when I was a kid, maybe 9 or so, and I was in my family. I was pretty much the quiet kid after around that age and later, and I didn't tend to speak up much. And there was a transition that happened where my mom went from kind of a standard, you know, omnivore diet to she went full vegan for a year.
Yikes.
Oh,
and then backed off of that and has been vegetarian ever since. But that was right around that age. And part of that change, you know, if somebody in your family does that, everyone else kind of has to follow along to some degree, just because, you know, if you don't have a lot of resources, you're having to buy double of everything and it becomes kind of unwieldy. And then you're making multiple meals. And so we had replaced butter with, it may not have been country crock, but some other similar like margarine style, like non-dairy, you know, vegan, non-dairy butter replacement option. And in a weird moment of like issues hitting each other, I decided that I was going to speak up because we were kind of trying this new, you know, quote unquote new butter for the first time. And we were all kind of, it was a moment of like trying to be supportive of her decision in a way. And like, I spoke up and was like, oh, it's great. Like, you know, normal butter doesn't even have any flavor to it. This has so much flavor. I don't even know that I stood by that opinion so much as I was just trying to be
supportive
in the moment. And my dad immediately like snapped. He didn't snap hard, but it was just like, are you kidding? Butter's the most flavorful thing in the world. Blah, 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 blah. And he's like a classically trained French chef. He's not French, but French classically trained. Like butter is the whole world. And a sub to that, he's, you know, Southern soul food cooking. So once again, like it's like his whole deal. I think he was dealing with like having to look at a future of not being able to cook with butter.
Yeah.
For our family. And there was this weird like hit that happened. And I got very slimed by that. I got very kind of burned by that moment. And I actually told him about that like a few months ago. It just sort of came up and I was like, do you remember that time? And he like, of course, had
no memory
of it, which is just one of those interesting illustrations of how kids can latch on to the weirdest, most obscure moments that most adults would never remember as like pivotal. You know, that created butter stigma for me.
Oh.
That's like, that moment was how butter became this thing, this like thing I had to regard differently.
Well, but wait, hold on. A thing that you had to regard as good or bad because you had people on both sides.
It was a thing that was less healthy because being vegan was supposed to be more healthy. Uh-huh. So this butter alternative was supposed to be also the healthy alternative. Uh-huh. And so butter by default was not, but then it was also, my dad kind of, in my mind, he was kind of weirdly gatekeeping cooking. Mm. Like there's a thing about that where he's a very talented, well, highly trained chef and never taught me how to cook.
Oh.
And I don't think I was particularly open to it. Like I didn't ask him to teach me how to cook either, but it is, there was that weird thing for a long time. That's why I didn't start cooking until like 4 years
ago. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just one of those like weird kind of creates a trajectory in your life sometimes.
I'm curious. So Michael and I already have led off with traumas associated with cooking fats, right? And I'm very aware of the fact that like whenever I see a food that is heavily infused with fat in some way, there's still a part of my brain that just goes like, that's for other people, right? Like you're not supposed to touch that. I'm curious if other people share that trauma here, if that's a commonly held thing, or if I'm alone in this.
So I have, I think, kind of the opposite reaction. Yeah. Because I did grow up in a, like, I think my mom's, because I don't know, my food wasn't super restrictive, but it was, I think my mom was very much in the mindset of like 90s low fat, like, oh, mm-hmm. we have to have the low fat versions of things because otherwise we'll all be fat, even though we all were basically, you know, everyone's weight fluctuated, but like we were mostly fat. But it was like, you know, no fat mayo, which was horrible. Oh. The country crock, the low fat cream cheese.
Yeah.
Skim milk.
And you know, in those in that day, that was the height of good parenting. Height of
Can I just say, just in case this isn't clear, I'm sure this is clear. I just want to re-underline this. If you like, if you listener like those things, power to you. That we're not trying to say like, oh, these are universally disgusting. It's just we have our own individual reactions. Like
they are
that are ours.
There were all these things that I like thought were just like a certain way. I will say,
what do you mean a certain way?
Like,
what do you mean?
That I thought I didn't like mayonnaise because like there was always whenever I would have something with mayonnaise, it's like I'm glad it's here, but ugh, like it's just this the low fat mayonnaise has this artificial like a, just a very kind of weird oil taste
because it's oil. Yeah,
kind of.
We like when I would go to a friend's house and you know they would really be living it up with 2% milk.
Oh yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
It was like whole like, oh my god, this is so rich.
Yeah, it was so rich compared to what you were used to. And whole milk.
Yeah.
What the fuck was whole milk? I didn't know what to do.
No, I know, I even know people today who are like they can't drink whole milk because it just tastes like heavy cream to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am one of them. I could never drink whole milk.
My eyes have been open because I'm like, oh my god, like there's like butter is good. Real mayo is good. So like if I know something has a lot of fats in it, I guess I'm like, that's probably gonna be very delicious.
Yeah. I was pretty lucky in that there was really not a lot of trauma in our household, even my grandparents' household, around this stuff. My grandparents loved what they called oleo, which was margarine. But I think it was, but you know, oleo was introduced in wartime as a low cost alternative for butter that was scarce and expensive. And then later it took on other like, oh, it's healthier and all that stuff. But so they actually liked it. My mother wanted no part of it. My father, being from Italy and below the olive oil line, despised butter. Like, you know, the worst thing you could do for him was put butter on toast. Because so to this day, I'm very like, I like butter, but I don't put it on everything. You know, for some applications of eggs, I can see cooking them in olive oil, depends on what I'm going for. I have a large repertoire. The thing that I tried to get used to was coconut oil. And I just found it to be the worst of both.
I love coconut oil.
I found it to be the worst of both worlds.
I really like coconut oil. I was very surprised by that, but I'm blaming it on my Samoan heritage.
Do you like that? I mean, there's two kinds. There's the sort of virgin and the non-virgin. I forget. One of them is like, boy, you better love the taste of coconut.
Yeah.
And two, the other one is like, okay, but it's hard to work with. It's sometimes solid, it's sometimes liquid.
I haven't used it a lot. I'll admit, like my experience of it mostly comes from like when I got the air fryer, I got a lot of coconut oil to spray on things that I use, and the flavor was I didn't taste any coconut. It was light. It was lovely.
Yeah, so. I mean the big claim to fame with coconut oil and the reason it's touted with pseudo health properties, it contains. I mean it's 90% saturated fat. That's everybody knows that. But it's mostly medium chain triglycerides, which are a quicker energy source, sort of, than a long chain triglyceride that you would normally find in something like butter or whatever. So, you know, there's this thing, it's a long, boring health lecture that I'll skip for people. But the point is, it's one of these things that is touted as having health value that, you know, people can debate depending on what your rubric for health is.
So we're in agreement, butter.
Well, but I think olive oil doesn't get nearly enough attention. And that sounds ridiculous because everybody's supposed to be using olive oil. But I think, you know, both as I've used it on my skin, it helps more than any moisturizer I've ever tried. I really love it.
In the winter time, I mean, I think I was the one that told you to put it on your skin, because when I was a little kid, I would get, my skin would get just so dry and raw in the winter. And my mom would like heat up a little bit of olive oil in a pan and then just kind of like rub me down like I was a big
potato. Well, but I began to look it up. And
did she salt you afterwards?
I was looking up the benefits of it. And apparently you can absorb the nutrients in olive oil through your skin. So it actually helps with things like healing, which was another thing I was having trouble with. Like I was having these scrapes and scars that wouldn't heal because my skin was so dry. Mm. And I found that olive oil helped that a lot.
Wow. Sorry, the baked potato thing just unlocked a memory of when I went to a spa a couple years ago. I got some like coconut milk, sugar, lime scrub.
Oh my.
And they like rubbed me in this like goopy paste and then wrapped me up in foil.
And then you had to pee.
I just remember like potato. Yeah, just like being on the table, like I can't, and like I was like, it was a little slippery, so I was like trying to stay on the table in this foil sheet, and like I feel like a roast right now.
Was there sour cream and bacon bits involved?
That was later, Michael.
No, but they were slicing up carrots and putting them in the pot with me.
I think there's a Warner Brothers cartoon like that.
I will say I did try, I was cooking with a lot of butter and I was like, well, let me see what I can kind of swap olive oil in for. And so I will start this by saying I did not think this was necessarily going to be good, but I still wanted to try it, which was, creating like French style scrambled eggs is essentially emulsifying butter with the eggs while you cook it. Like you're kind of lightly scrambling, but mostly just stirring in melted butter or butter that's actively melting while you're cooking the eggs.
Yeah.
I was like, what if I try that with olive oil? It is bad.
No, you
don't
really.
Disgusting.
Sorry.
I assumed that would be the case, but I just wanted to know like what level of, you know, where does it land? It's bad. I do not recommend it.
Yeah.
Olive oil is great for a lot of things, but.
And that ain't it.
That ain't it.
You know.
No, I do love that. Yeah.
Something I was resistant to with olive oil, I would always see like these Bon Appetit chefs and stuff finishing stuff with olive oil.
I love that. I love the taste.
And
of that.
I was always like, that just seems like a little much. Like I love that.
You mean
that,
like finishing a dish and then pouring olive oil over
drizzling
the top of it?
Drizzling.
Okay.
And I did that when I did it for the first time. Oh my God. It was my three fats pasta. I emulsified some like butter into the tomato sauce. It was like a mixture of butter, tomato sauce, and then drizzled olive oil and finished it with Parmesan cheese. And it was like red pepper flakes.
Delicious.
It was so goddamn good.
Sounds good.
I agree. I have also started an experiment. I think it helps understanding that also there's a wide variation or a wide spectrum of like qualities of olive oil.
Yes.
Or like flavors just types, of olive oil.
Just types.
Yeah, just exactly. Types. So like what kind of olive oil you put on to finish will make a difference in that flavor. But yeah, I highly recommend this because it's, if you think about cooking as like layering flavors, you know, from inside to out, you know, if you want somebody to have a certain experience on the instant that they put the bite in their mouth, whether it's like the flavor of olive oil, which then can transition to the flavor of the rest of the food. Yeah, there's, you layer your flavors and that's just one of the elements of it.
Yeah. And people don't, as you say, they don't appreciate the variety. People talk about the terroir of the wine, which is basically the soil it grows in and how that influences the flavor. And there's the same thing with olive oil, whether it's coming from Greece or Spain or France. And it, you know, because sometimes some olive oil is deeply herbaceous or grassy. Sometimes it's spicy. Sometimes, and it's just where it's grown. It's just where it's grown.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I on this trip, I thought a fun story to kind of wrap up on was at the same airport in St. Louis where we were talking to Reggie, Michael and I were sitting, we were trying to find a place to sit down. We ended up walking up and saw this empty bench and we're like, oh, this could be great. And then halfway through that thought, the aroma of Auntie Anne's pretzels from across the street just started wafting across like this hallway. It was like right across from the bench. And I turned around, I was like, oh my God. Okay, obviously, if we're sitting here, we have to get some. Like, there's no 3.5 hours. There's no way either of us can weather that storm. And so I went and got some. That was great. But we're sitting there just like baking in the aroma of Auntie Anne's pretzels, which is quite a pleasant smell. It's delicious. And as we're sitting there watching the people go by, we're kind of just chilling because we got plenty of time. The kind of the crowd clears out a little bit. It's like between flights. And this older fat lady on a scooter comes scooting her way down the street. And I was just sort of watching her casually. And you could, the best thing was that you could identify the exact second that her, that she drove through that aroma herself, because she put that scooter into the tightest U-turn I have ever seen. I swear to God, she was on two wheels. She didn't slow down, didn't even brake, just full immediate U-turn.
That's the best control. I have made a turn like
she
that.
She knew what she was doing. Yeah.
That's great.
It was impressive. I swear she would have run over anybody if they had been there in her way. I think there was somebody in line and she just cut the line. Like,
we stand the pretzel queen.
She was, and I was just watching like, yes, that is amazing. Like, she did not care. She was getting her some Auntie Anne's.
Get yourself a pretzel today, listener. Swerve and make that U-turn and get yourself a pretzel.
Swerve wildly. Surprise yourself with the directions you can go.
Do we have a tip for today?
No tip for today.
Well, since we were talking about the wonderful world of edible oils, I figured maybe our questions should deal with those too. We've got different questions about different oils that have improved the lives of mankind across the ages. So during the 1800s, really, whale oil was one of the biggest oils around. It ran lamps. It kept our industry lubricated. It was everywhere. Now, which of the following, however, were not, did not use whale oil in their production commonly? All right. Mm-hmm. One, margarine. Two, nitroglycerin. Three, car lubrication. Or four, kerosene.
I'm going to go with margarine because I feel like that's the only one that's like direct to consumer, like a little, it feels a little less industrial than the other three.
Okay.
So that, yeah, that's the direction I'm going to go.
I'm also going to go with margarine.
Boy, that's tough. I'm torn between nitroglycerin and margarine.
I mean, we've figured out how to break this game, Dan. It's we all vote for the same thing.
I'm going to be the asshole. I'm going to go with nitroglycerin.
All right.
Well, in fact, the correct answer was kerosene. Kerosene was the only thing that was competing with whale oil for the lamp market.
I used the opposite reason.
What was interesting was that it was around the 1930s, they figured out how to basically make nitroglycerin out of whale oil. So during both world wars, we were blowing up the enemy with whale oil.
Hmm. What about margarine?
You couldn't eat whale oil up until the 1930s when they figured out a way to turn it into a solid, and they started producing margarine and soap.
Well, yeah, that's been hydrogenation. Yeah.
And in cars, it was used as automatic transmission fluid until 1973.
Whoa. Oh, because that was the year they banned whaling, I think, in the U.S.
Oh, yep. Wow. Right. Ugh, that's gross.
So I always try and go into the history a little bit. And with cooking oil, the history is a little weird because, we had the history of the first cooking oil, the first minute a piece of fatty meat hit the first camp mm-hmm. stove. So we're going to modify it a little bit. What was the first vegetable oil widely used by mankind?
Hmm.
Right. One, avocado oil. Hmm. Two, olive oil. Hmm. Three, grape oil. Or four, linseed oil.
I think it's linseed or olive oil.
I'm leaning olive, but that might just be the obvious answer.
I'm going with the linseed just because I would assume oil, but because I don't really know what linseed is, I feel like...
Oh, it's the seed of lin.
Yeah. If it helps, linseed oil is basically flaxseed oil. It's a different type of flax. That's all.
I'll go with linseed.
All right, two Lindsay, right. One for Olive.
I'm the odd man out.
Michael pulling out into the lead early on.
I got one right.
Yep. So it looks like olives we started using olives for olive oil around 6000 BC. It's been a long time we've been using it. And most estimations, the second one to show up on the scene is linseed oil, but that one's around 3000 BC or 2000 BC.
Wow. Man.
All right. Our final question of the day. What oil-based product is marketed as being able to improve your snow shovel, keep squirrels off your bird feeder, prevent diaper rash, rejuvenate old wooden bowls, and remove lipstick from clothing?
I think I know the answer to this.
Oh, Michael, you get double points if you answer before I even give the options.
Oh, that's a tough one. That's a good offer. Shit. All right, my guess is Crisco.
All right. The different options are 1, mayonnaise, 2, salad dressing, 3, white chocolate, or 4, Crisco.
Crisco seems logical.
Well, I was one of the options. That's pretty good to start.
Well, I tagged it on there. I'm not going to say if I replace something or not.
Well,
oh, okay.
Well, then you can't tell us you tagged it on there.
Well, I tagged it. I moved it down to the bottom so you wouldn't know if it was something I tagged on or not.
I want to go with salad dressing.
I just don't get, but the oil and the vinegar, I guess, is an acid.
Well, what does salad dressing mean in this context?
Do you mean Miracle Whip?
Or is it Miracle Whip or is it is it
oil and vinegar?
Oil and vinegar based. We'll go with that. It's just that you could conceivably use like this dressing to keep squirrels away and this dressing for diaper rash.
I stand by my original guess.
I think it's Crisco.
Yeah,
Crisco is so close to petroleum jelly.
I'm dragging them down with me.
Well, because Crisco is so close to Vaseline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Next time we go over to Dan and Travis, we're like, are they baking? No.
Well, no, because my first thought was going to be Vaseline, but I'm like, I don't think you would use Vaseline to rejuvenate bowls.
I don't think Vaseline is made out of edible oil either.
If I'm correct, I have a very good explanation for why I'm correct. And if I'm incorrect, I have a very good explanation for why I should have been correct.
Not to stretch things out, but Michael, you are in fact correct. Crisco is recommended for all of these things.
Double points. So in my mind,
and a few more.
I vaguely the snow shovel thing, sure, but the one that really did it for me was the squirrel fending off squirrels, because I know that people will grease like bird feeders so that the squirrels will fall off trying to climb them.
That is in fact the way Crisco recommends. And
that is such a fucking southern, like, country ass thing to do.
Yeah,
and how many Southerners just have a can of Crisco lying around? Everyone,
as opposed to a can of high quality olive oil.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
The article I took this from actually makes a joke about, and you get an hour of entertainment out of it too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and that's no shade against Southerners. I'm from Virginia. These are my people. So,
dear listener, do you have another use for Crisco that you recommend? Trevor, where can they tell us about
We're on Twitter and Instagram as at Big Fat Gay Pod. We're on Facebook as the Big Fat Gay Podcast. Leave us 5 stars there. Leave us 5 stars or a review on your preferred podcast platform.
Yeah.
Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/bigfatgaypod. See the articles we talked about at www.bigfatgaypod.com. You know.
Yada, yada.
Maybe you're greasing up your score hole pole. And
Trevor, just think, use the real word.
Wow.
And now the squirrels are all greased up, so they're gonna be going everywhere. So
somebody could do a really high squirrel voice.
Yeah, there you go.